on me, I'm not giving up. I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares. Nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. I'm really happy to be back. Really happy to be alive in this crazy time. 2007, January 18th, we got like two more days left before Trump officially takes over. And, you know, there's a bunch of different prevailing theories about what's going to happen once that happens and blah, 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 blah. There's going to be a huge, huge protesting going on Inauguration Day. I've heard that it could possibly be as big as some of the marches and stuff seen not since the 60s. So this is not a small time thing. This is no joke. I guess the last big, really big protest that went on was maybe during the march against Monsanto, and before that the anti-war protests leading up to the war in Iraq. And you know, before that you have to look back some years to see, you know, what went on. Nothing really, really big in between the 60s and now, you know. And so they're saying this is going to be something as big as what you would see during the 60s. And so that's something that is very notable, and we should take note of that and start to understand that there's a huge opposition to Donald Trump, and for very legitimate reasons. You know, the guy has been shown himself to be a demagogue, a very divisive figure, anti-Muslim by many accounts. He's trying to start trade wars. But at the same time, he's tapped into a vein of resentment and frustration that is kind of left behind the working class of not only the United States, but the developed world. And this is why we're starting to see movements like these nationalist, protectionist, inward-looking movements springing up all around the world. I mean, Trump wasn't the first case. I mean, Brexit preceded Trump. Before that, we started seeing these movements rising throughout Europe. And they're going to be rising throughout Europe. France, in all likelihood, is going to elect a female version of Donald Trump in their coming election. You know, Britain has been rocked by kind of isolationist nationalist politics recently with UKIP. You know, there was that recent Scottish independent referendum that barely failed by the slimmest of margins. You know, and so these movements are springing up all over the place, and that's one of the things that was addressed recently at Davos. And DB, my longtime co-host, he's on the line now. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, Nick. I mean, in a long time, I feel a positive rush that things are kind of moving in the right direction in a lot of ways. It may be short-lived and all for naught, but I'll enjoy it for now.
So have you been seeing what's been going on over at Davos? This is, you know, the World Economic Forum is what many people may know it by. But this is a place where all the – it's like the more public version of Bilderberg, basically, where all the rich, exactly. powerful people show up and they talk to each other and tell each other that, oh, we got to do stuff about – and we got to do stuff about climate change. Now the big topic this year is we got to do something about all these populist movements that are springing up all over the place. And so this to me is something very interesting to keep an eye on. DB, have you seen this going on?
Yeah, I have, Nick. We delve into a little bit of a different topic base on Tuesdays, me and Jake and Claire last night, but it follows kind of what I believe is happening, which is China's taking the mantle of globalism. China wants to push with a one world scenario. Donald Trump represents nationalism in the U.S. Therefore, we will have a clash manufactured on schedule.
Which is exactly what we reported on today on the anti-media, as far as China looking like it's going to pick up the world, you know, the lead from a world economic level. Now, this isn't exactly super surprising. We've been talking about this on the show for several years now, that there's a kind of a shift in power going on. And I think anybody can kind of see that. And maybe that is why someone like Donald Trump won the election, because people have seen the weakening of the U.S. and the rise of China. And they're like, oh, shit, we need to do something about this. And it's our fault that China's getting so powerful, because we're doing all kinds of business with them and stuff. And, you know, so on and so on, which, of course, is at least a little bit true, partially true. But anyway, you know, the Chinese president basically went to Davos and he made some comments, gave a speech. It was the first speech by a Chinese politician at Davos, which that itself is kind of telling. But let me read to you what some analysts are saying. Chinese trade experts with government ties have already hinted that if the Trump administration imposes barriers on Chinese goods, they are ready to retaliate through steps like switching aircraft contracts from Boeing to Airbus, diverting food imports, import contracts to rival countries like Brazil, and possibly making it more difficult for Apple to sell iPhones to China. You know, what we're dealing with now with between Trump and China is a ratcheting up of trade war rhetoric. And not only is Trump doing the China trade war stuff, he's also doing it with Mexico. So what we're dealing with here with Trump, and keep in mind, the U.S. is still a big powerhouse economically, militarily. Obviously, there's no other military that could legitimately challenge us from a, you know, conventional standpoint. But a lot of these countries are so big now and so powerful, like China, for instance, that they don't have to bend too far to our negotiations. And this is what, now let's not get ahead of ourselves and stuff, but this is what Trump is doing. Trump is preemptively negotiating via Twitter, and this may sound crazy, but this is what he's doing. He's preemptively negotiating trade deals, even though he hasn't even gotten to office yet, on Twitter, trying to gain a better positioning against China and Mexico to get kind of more favorable trade deals. At least that's what it seems like he's doing to me.
And circumventing the mainstream media.
Yeah, he is. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is the problem that some of these countries have been starting to vocalize, is both China and Mexico are ready to, they're not going to move that far on the negotiating if Trump is, like, embarrassing them or, like, mocking them or, you know, calling them names and saying dumb things about them. It would be very, very politically unpopular back home for these people to come over here and negotiate with Donald Trump. So I don't think Trump is going about it in the right way, and this could definitely spark a trade war, which would be disastrous for the U.S. economy. You know,
what if they were to release satellite intel that showed that there's 500,000 Chinese troops in Mexico right now?
I mean, that would be a complete game changer.
Good reason for a wall, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There
I'm
you
just,
go.
I've read a lot of things, Nick, and I'm really open-minded. I have friends in the military. Apparently, that's a true story, because they were waiting for the collapse that was supposed to come for our economy, and then they were going to come in and grab a bunch of land, and we were going to just let them take it, and that was going to way they were going to usher in globalism. The breakup of the U.S., we were going to get attacked by all these countries at one time. And guess what? The military found that shit out.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before. Like, tell me some more about it.
Well, I mean, there's only one way you can topple us. I mean, we're an absolute impregnable fortress except from within. So you plant enough horrible leaders at the top that destroy our country economically and destroy the will of the people, and they're ripe to be picked off, and we're ripe to have a bunch of places attack us all at one time. That's what it seemed like was going on for a long time, didn't it not? I mean, did it really seem like the people in charge were really loyal to us, Americans? They hated us. It was obvious. At the very least, I feel like now we're not hated. Maybe we're looked on as peons, and we're children, and we need to be led. But I don't believe anymore that we're hated.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because, you know, here's the thing, and here's what people are saying about what's going on between the U.S. and China, is that China is now, like you said, picking up the mantle and is getting ready to lead the globalist order, which is inevitable. I mean, it's here, it's been here for a long time now. People are starting to say, hey, maybe there's some problems with it, and that's, I guess, outgrowths of those ideas or issues with globalism is what has created this nationalist movements around the world. Here's what another analyst had to say about the Chinese president's comment at Davos. He said, if we look back 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you could say that this was a turning point at which China did move up in the direction of asserting the kind of global leadership role that the U.S. has had for about a century and might willfully be abdicating. So this is pretty interesting, and actually something that seems pretty logical here is, you know, empires rise and fall, and we've been talking about this for a long time on this radio show about the ebb and flow of the United States and how the country passed its peak a while back. And so it's only, you know, judging by history and stuff, it's like, well, someone else is going to come up next. And it's been pretty obvious that China is definitely going to be the next big world power, you know. And so as countries like the U.S. and England, who may have benefited from this global order for a while and had at least our corporations grow massively huge. And another piece of news that we reported on yesterday was about how only, you know, 8 people now own the wealth of, you know, 50% of the poorest people. And this is all part of this neoliberal world order. And so countries with this massive amount of inequality, like the United States, like England, like many other countries around the world, are starting to look inwardly and are starting to question this world order that is going on right now, which is the globalism and the neoliberal order, whatever it is we want to call it. We all know what it is. It's forgotten a lot of people. Like, a lot of people have been left behind by this. And it's also going on in Mexico, which is something that we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the show. We're going to have a special guest to talk about what's going on in Mexico. But, I mean, it's happening all over the place. Everyone who's involved in it is experiencing this massive inequality, and China is not immune to it either. China has a huge inequality, you know, wealth gap. And
the worst part...
before China, before the people in China feel the same way that people in the U.S. are feeling right now, you know. And so it's flawed, right? The neoliberal world order is flawed. It creates massive inequality on, you know, something that we've never seen before. It's never been this bad before. And so it's not going to be sustainable. And sooner or later, there's going to be breaks in this order, and it's starting to happen. Brexit led the way. The election of Donald Trump is the second nail in the coffin. And then in the next couple of years, we'll see country after country in Europe start falling to nationalist governments. And then the European Union, you know, is more than likely going to dissolve or become just seriously weakened. And, you know, there's going to be just a period of, it seems like to me, a period of more like isolationism and, you know, nationalism. But the problem is that what seems to always follow those things are big conflicts, because then people on, you know, people that were formerly cooperating, like, for instance, the U.S. and Mexico, where right now we're cooperating economically, although it is basically mostly benefiting the extremely rich, it does benefit U.S. workers and consumers in some ways, you know, lower prices and things like that. But, you know, it's going to lead to conflicts, you know, as the nationalism takes over, protectionism takes over. And, you know, like, just like it's like a micro level right now, what's going on with Trump on Twitter between, you know, Trump and Vicente Fox and like people in Mexico going back and forth on Twitter with Donald Trump. It's like a micro, you know, conflict about of what could actually be happening, like, let's say 5 or 10 years from now, where people start getting this idea of nationalism and taking it to the next level. And that's where we start running into big time issues, not only here, but man, Europe has just historically been a place where there's constantly nationalistic wars over there in Europe. And the EU has been this kind of band-aid that has like band-aided over the top of these underlying issues that have been plaguing Europe since like the since they've had been having civilization over there. They've been going at it with each other. You know, people like to say, oh, well, the Muslim people have been killing each other for a long time. It's like, that may be partially true. Like, a lot of that's propaganda, but let's not fool ourselves. Europe has been at war with itself for a very, very, very long time. You know what I mean? So the EU, which is this big kind of, for those not familiar, it's like a big, it's like a super state, and it's like a association of countries in Europe, and it's called the European Union. And it has since World War II, or especially after the fall of the Soviet Union, has been like a organization that has for the most part kind of kept the place out of war. But that's had a bunch of its own problems. The EU is all messed up. You know, they got central bank problems. They've got debt problems. They've got, you know, the refugee crisis. There's like a bunch of issues they're having over there. And so that entire order is in jeopardy, man. The entire current way we know about the current way that things are going on in the world that we're experiencing, all that stuff is kind of coming to an end, it seems. And, you know, Trump and Brexit and all these other things that are about to happen are really ushering in a new era. And, you know, China is going to be the next big global economic power. You know, the U.S. may be able to retain its military, you know, superiority for like a good time coming, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that China is the upcoming, you know, major power that's going to really be asserting itself. And that's what this is what we've been covering on the anti-media the last few days. China is asserting itself all around the China Sea, and there's a bunch of countries in there, a bunch of little countries mostly. And China's basically doing what it wants. And nobody's really challenging them. The U.S. at this point can't really go over there and challenge them, unless we want to start even worsening the issues here, you know. And so we're just going to have to deal with this big, you know, China issue without being too dumb about it. And that's the problem, man. We got Trump at the helm at this point. And who knows what kind of dumb shit he may say or do with China. It's not a good it's not a good scenario to be having Trump in charge of dealing with China. So, you know, anyway, dude, it's just something to keep an eye on, because it's just something that's not being talked about nearly enough. And I know that the inauguration is coming up, and you know it's going to be a big deal, and we'll see what happens. We're actually going to have a live streamer out there streaming on the Anti-Media Facebook page from the inauguration. We're not going to be covering like the crap C-SPAN is covering, which is just the ceremony. We're going to be like having someone in there covering the protests and stuff, which again, like I said earlier, these are going to be some serious protests. These are going to be huge, huge protests. And you know, we gotta keep in mind and put in check these like misinformation campaigns about how protesters are getting paid all kinds of money to go out and protest. I mean, the main story that was going around was like people were going to get paid $2,500 to protest Trump. I mean, that turned out to be completely fabricated. You know, the website and everything that was like this supposed organization that was going to pay people, it's all fake. It's just like their Facebook page is like 3 days old. And like, so like there's a lot of disinformation. Like people are literally just putting out fake offers to like pay protesters just to generate fake news stories about, oh, they're paying the protesters to protest Trump and therefore they're illegitimate. Like, so there's a lot of misinformation, and that's why we have to be so careful, because misinformation is coming from the Trump side of things, misinformation coming from the, you know, Democratic side of things, misinformation coming from the top, from the rogue elements of the intelligence community in the United States. There's disinformation coming from activists, you know, and so we have to be very careful. The thing that we can rely on is live, raw video from the ground. And that's the thing that we could always rely on. It's becoming harder and harder to take the Associated Press's word for something when they say, oh, this person tells us that this happened. It's like, it's getting much harder to believe that, just because I've been watching so closely with the news stories that get put out and regurgitated in the mainstream media. And so many of them are not fact checked. So many of them are not even like legit stories. They cannot even be verified, yet they're like reproduced at an alarming rate and become basically common knowledge. That's why we have to be so careful. Like, a lot of stuff is easily fabricated, and misinformation, fake news, and bad information, it's prevalent as hell. And that's why, you know, we try to be so careful about putting out anything that's even questionably untrue. The story earlier this week, which was like unbelievable. I wrote it. I couldn't believe that it was real at first. Like I gave it a day, and I'm checking with my sources and the people on the ground and military experts with the equipment. And it's literally a surface to air missile system, a Standing Rock. I mean, it's unbelievable what they have going on here. Now, of course, getting back to the part about not spreading misinformation, the North Dakota National Guard claims that the Humvee is not armed with live missiles, that they're using it for surveillance purposes. But several military experts that we've talked to have just basically said, okay, like, that's kind of believable, but that's a really dumb reason for having that thing out there when there's much cheaper.
They're just anti-drone, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, there's much cheaper and smaller pieces of equipment that could be doing the same thing that they're claiming that this thing is being used to do. So it's still a questionable thing. But the truth of the matter is that there is physically and literally an anti-aircraft, a surface-to-air missile system for small or low-altitude aircraft stationed at Standing Rock. This is just like,
they have those LARS too, that Nick, those sonic cannons. You remember how, you know how I always joke about brown noise? Well, it's the same kind of thing. It just wants to make people disperse because it gets really uncomfortable.
Yeah, those LRADs, man, those things are horrible. Like, they actually hurt your ears just watch, like, rewatching them on video. Like, if you're watching them on live, you're watching a live stream and you hear the LRAD playing through the stream, it'll hurt your ears like on the other side. I can't even imagine being there.
Do you think they'll unleash the micro drone swarm? Because they just tested it almost like an intimidation video.
Man, I hope not, dude. Yeah, those micro drones are frightening. And that's actually one of the things that people who talk about, like, physically resisting drones and drone surveillance and drone warfare and stuff. It's like, one drone is one thing. Like, people can shoot down a big drone. Like just like that system they have up there at Standing Rock. If you get your hands on a system like that, you could shoot down a big drone that's flying in the sky. But how do you shoot down 5,000 micro drones flying at you at once? You can't. There's no gun that's going to shoot down 5,000 micro drones. People that I've talked to that have been into the kind of hacking end of the spectrum talk about building weapons that can, like, DDoS drone swarms and take them down all at once. And those are the kind of weapons that people are starting to develop to deal with drone swarms, because those things are they're unstoppable otherwise. You know, like, there's no conventional weapon systems you could use against a drone swarm. They're just too small. There's too many of them. Like, you can't do it. So, you know, but this is just insane, dude. I can't believe that they're deploying a surface-to-air missile system. I don't care if it's unarmed or not. It's insane that they're deploying it on U.S. soil against American protesters that have been, for the most part, peaceful. Sure, there's been a few incidents where people have thrown rocks and stuff like that. But
did you see what they signed in North Dakota with the, if you hit somebody on the freeway now, you're not at fault?
Yeah, dude, that bill, it's been proposed by a lawmaker where they want to allow
you know who lobbied the guy that introduced that bill? All the insurance companies, dude. The insurance companies don't want to be liable for people getting hit by being on the freeway in a protest.
I wouldn't doubt that at all, dude. That's ridiculous what they're doing, dude, to activists.
Everything's Freakonomics.
And Obama hasn't even left office yet. And this is the thing. Yeah. We're talking, everyone's worried about how bad Trump's going to be. Obama has allowed surface-to-air missile systems deployed to peaceful Native American protesters. It's ridiculous.
What if they shoot a missile and kill someone? I heard a girl got hit on a snowmobile now, and now it's serious. It's more than just injuring your arm and getting it blown up. That was horrible enough. This girl got hit by a snowmobile going 30 miles an hour. She didn't even get – an ambulance took an hour to get to her, dude. Like, could you imagine getting hit by a car and then seriously being out in the snow and all? I mean, dude, it's just – somebody's going to die there. It's going to get crazy. They're going to have, like, some crazy armed militia is going to show up, because these guys at this point are not cops anymore. Like, I don't – who's paying them? What are they doing there? How are any of these departments justifying any of these dudes being on payroll over there?
And
it's
from
the biggest
shit
I've ever seen.
What I was reading is that this missile system is actually located on private property, on land that has been that is now property of the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, and so it's like the Dakota Access Pipeline has, like, a really, really, you know, and now with this missile system, a really expensive security system paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. I mean, if this isn't corporate welfare, I don't know what is. You know what I mean? I mean, it's unbelievable, dude. It's just, I don't even know what to make of it, man. It's just so bad. It's not a good sign. And again, like I said, we're talking about Obama here. We're not talking about Trump being in office yet. So if you think it was bad under Obama, I mean, get ready. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention was that, going back to this march on D.C., I think it's being called just the Women's March, but everybody's invited. I was in contact with a guy. We may be covering it tomorrow. I'm not sure. I was in contact with a guy that was helping organize with the Occupy movement over in Washington, D.C., and he was telling me about what they had planned and stuff. And, dude, there's a lot of different groups out there, man. Occupy movement, veteran groups, and it's not like just an anti-Trump thing, like, completely. It's also just it really is a big coalition of people, and it's not all Democrats, it's not all Hillary supporters. I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of them probably are, but there's a big coalition going on. And so this is going to be
a lot of former Hillary supporters, Nick. I've been keeping a pulse on that women's march, and a lot of people are extremely resentful at her and have serious voters remorse that they didn't go with Bernie and follow their heart. And that's their fault, and they get to live with that crappy decision they made. And you know, in a way, I guess Trump is what we needed as a country to wake up.
Yeah, I guess that was part of the point I wanted to get to, is like Donald Trump hasn't really succeeded in doing much so far, besides starting up this trade war with China and Mexico, at least rhetorically. What Trump has already accomplished is he has made protesting great again. That I can tell you, because in San Diego, if you guys remember back to during the Republican, I think it was still during the primaries, when Donald Trump came here to San Diego, and there was like 2,000 people that showed up to protest against Donald Trump. I can't tell you how the last time we've had a protest of 2,000 people here in San Diego. The people here don't really get out and protest that much. That's just the way it is around here. But we had 2,000 people show up against Donald Trump when he came here during the campaign. That was a huge protest, and it got really intense. And it was the most radical protest that San Diego has had in a long time. Now, the inauguration protest, which was, of course, inspired by the election of Donald Trump, it's looking to be one of the biggest protests that we've seen in the United States since the 60s. You know, and so Donald Trump has invited the quote-unquote protest movement. Now, the problem with this kind of protest movement is that it's obviously partisan, and that they, where in the hell were all these people when Obama was overthrowing Libya? Where were these people when Obama was trying to start a war with Syria? Where were all these people when we were drone bombing 7, 8, 9, 10 different countries over the period of Obama's, you know, presidency? And that's the problem here, is that, cool, we've got this big protest movement because Donald Trump is president. But what happens when the next cool guy becomes president? Where are all these protesters? Like, the Donald Trumps, in some ways, aren't as dangerous as the Barack Obamas, because at least Donald Trump, people already suspect him of being an asshole, and they're going to go protest him no matter what he does, which I'm in favor of, but we have to apply it equally across the aisle. Otherwise, we're just going to have an ebb and flow where, hey, for 4 years, we're going to care about corruption and wars and stuff, and then for 4 years, we're not. Or for eight, even worse, 8 years, yes, 8 years, no. 8 years, yes, eight you know, years, no. Like, you it's know ridiculous.
What, you know what, Nick? We are blessed. We are so blessed to have a president that is an awful public speaker. We are so blessed because we've had an amazing actor for 8 years. He duped intelligent people. He made them look like idiots. And for supporting him, and immoral and unethical. Anyone that voted for Obama his second term, or Hillary, you can say you're unethical and immoral. You're an idiot. You got duped. And this guy, he's such an awful, awful actor that he can't dupe anyone. And that's a great thing for this country.
Great point, man. Great point. On that point, I'm going to bring in our awesome journalist, Jake Anderson. What's up, dude?
Hey, just went to a book club meeting about 1984. It was really boring.
Dude, that sounds amazing, actually.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't amazing.
Right, it was.
It was really awkward.
Were you the was it all men?
No, there were women there. Yeah, but it was dominated. It was mansplained a lot. There was a lot of men talking.
Yeah, that's why it was so boring.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm you know, I don't know. I'm just jumping in. I don't know what you guys were talking about.
Well, 1984 is pretty phenomenal because it has such an ending where it's like so like the ending itself is so dystopian, because the whole time, like, I know when I was reading that book, I was like expecting the whole time, like, all right, dude, Winston's gonna overthrow this shit. He's gonna, like, you know, join the revolution, and he's gonna, you know, fall in love, and all this great stuff is gonna happen. And then it's like, nope, nope. Winston found Big Brother, and he got completely vegetized, and his brain got scrambled up, and that was it.
Well, 1984 is one of those books that it's always relevant to just about anything. You know, it's any political atmosphere. It's relevant. I mean, it's a cautionary tale in any way you look at it, but it's particularly relevant right now. You know, one of the ideas in there is that, you know, by manipulating language, by shortening and truncating words, you can control people. And you know, I don't necessarily think that aspect of it we see in society, but certainly there's a reality in which or a situation in which, you know, there's a consensus reality in which they're trying to keep people bouncing the same ideas off of each other back and forth. In the book, they try and they discourage people from being alone. They want people to constantly be around each other. And so you get that kind of echo chamber effect that we're seeing right now. I mean, I don't think you can get a better, you know, example of you know, kind of Orwellian doublespeak than this whole the whole fake news thing, and the way that the mainstream media, the way the government uses the mainstream media to create this echo chamber of truth and to define what is true. So in that sense, you know, this day and age, we're seeing a lot of echoes of kind of Orwellian language. So that's what's on my mind.
We have a lot of newspeak going on too. I mean, look at the, I mean, I use them myself. I'm not complaining or anything, but look how 1984-ish it is that we use all things like WTF and, right, you know, AF.
Alt-right, alt-left, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's really been just a devolution of, you know, political thought and political philosophy. I mean, how many... Can you name any awesome political philosophers like of our age, like of like the millennial generation?
Christopher Hitchens?
I mean, we're immersed in it, right? Like we're in the industry we're in, being it that we're an activist centric news outlet. I mean, we're immersed in the philosophers, and there's still not that many of them. Think about the regular people out there that are just regular observers and haven't realized exactly maybe the depth of corruption that goes on. Or have found information that is hard to find information.
You have to wrap it in humor or satire, like George Carlin or Douglas Adams or somebody like that, where you can't actually tell people what's going on. You have to mask it now, and it's kind of sad that way.
And there's, you know, there's very little new thought going on out there. Like Jake said, dude, it's just an echo chamber. The internet has been a wet dream for the echo chamber centric propaganda model, dude. And it's just, look at what's going on. Look at it. I mean, we posted a meme to promote this show tonight on our Facebook page that was comparing what Donald Trump is doing with, you know, bread and circuses, of course, with all the Twitter crap and all the celebrity feuds and all this shit. And people are like offended. They're offended. The Trump people, the ones that are not snowflakes, supposedly, they're offended by it. So, you know, the echo chamber.
To get over their butt hurt.
It's the echo chamber is so great. Everybody just wants to hear what they already think is right. Nobody wants to be challenged by tough ideas or ideas that make them think or ideas that make them question their state of reality or make them question much of anything, really. They just want everything they already think to be reinforced. I mean, this is what is devolving us so quickly now with all this echo chamber.
And criticizing and questioning Trump prior to his regime beginning does not make you anti-American. And we want to see whoever's leading the country succeed despite the political party or because of it. Who cares? I mean, if Donald Trump was running underneath the Spaghetti Monster's God Party and he won and he did a good job, no one's going to care. So that's all we care about, is that people are going to do a good job. And if not, they need to get the hell out of there. And if the system can't work anymore, I mean, we have to find a way to transition to something else.
Exactly, man. And that's why we need new philosophers. That's why we need new thinkers, dude. But it's so tough right now to come out with a new idea or a new philosophy or a new way of thinking without offending somebody or without, you know, just the whole waterfall of things that are going on right now. Not to mention the fact that everybody's already so caught up in their own ways. I mean, study after study, survey after survey shows you that the United States is becoming increasingly partisanized and, you know, compartmentalized, I guess you could say, because not most people don't actually fall within the Republican and the Democrat, but the people that do, they're extremely, extremely partisan, man. They're like, they literally vote against the other party. They don't even vote for their party. That's exactly what happened with in 2016 with the Democrats. I mean, it was
how many people voted, Nick or Jake? How many people voted or of the eligible voters? This wasn't it under 30%.
The total amount of people that voted in the election came out, I think, to about 120 to 130 million people.
Okay, so maybe half or 40% of the eligible voters?
Well, almost two-thirds didn't vote. Almost okay. Two-thirds.
All right, so those are the people that are down the middle that couldn't bring themselves to vote for either god-awful candidate and just wanted somebody sane. Can we have a sanity party at some point, please?
I think that's asking too much, dude. We can't have sanity. Sanity is controversial, bro.
Gotta have insanity. You gotta have that insanity.
Dudes. Jake, what do you think, man?
Didn't John Stewart had a rally like 2 years ago that was the something about sanity. It was I can't remember the exact name of it, but the word sanity was in it. But I think it's also Stewart's pun. I'm not aligned with Stewart so much.
I think
Make America Sane Again, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. One of the tenets was to replace Department of Defense with the Department of Peace, and people were like, what does that mean? That sounds stupid. And they're like, well, actually, think about this. We'll make actually just one change. Just one policy change will change our department. We'll bring our aircraft carriers, we'll transfer them from the Navy to the Coast Guard. That's all we're going to do. What would that do to our country? We become, instead of an occupier of other countries, a fortress.
Jake, go ahead, dude.
Just a second. My reception is bad.
It's all good, dude.
I just think we're, historically at a point where, I mean, I personally think we're about 20 to 30 years off from a technological singularity that is going to disrupt, you know, our perception of history, of humanity, really. And I think we're nearing an end to a kind of old age, an old way of thinking, where we've seen the limits of human thought, really, of what we can do with our current biological setup. Our current biological software has been pushed to the limit, and we need a mechanism by which to evolve. And I really truly think that short of a spiritual evolution, which obviously would be ideal, but just really hasn't happened, at least not on a global level. We have not seen the human race awakening on a large scale yet. I think it's going to take, an adoption of certain kinds of technology that will wake people up. And, you know, I hate to sound like a technophile, but something is going to have to change us, because we are on a collision course with world war, with ecocide, with, you know, with going extinct, with the sixth extinction, and something's gonna have to change.
Can't we just use drones to do Johnny Weed Seed program and shoot weed all over the U.S. because it would clean up, it would clean up all the environmental pollution, and then we could like harvest it and get rid of all our dependency on foreign paper. Johnny Weed Seed with drones. I say we have to get this petition going to Trump. Let me tell you what Trump represents, at least for the beginning of his term. And if we keep the pressure on every single day, he has to respond. He will respond to Twitter. He's a Twitterer, okay? Yeah. If we mass Twitter him all the time, he's going to respond. He's going to get ideas. We have to pump his brain full of ideas every day. We have to give him 1,440-something days of huge ideas all the time and make him think he thought of them. And that's how we can change our country. For the first time ever, we can have a guy that's susceptible to the people's voice because he's an egomaniac in the best way. And he will make shit happen, but we have to pressure him every day. I mean, to start with something like that would be phenomenal.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point. I will admit, even though I'm from a largely, I mean, I, you know, used to be a Democrat, and I definitely align on the left. When I think of Trump, I don't get this overwhelming feeling of hatred and that I think a lot of Democrats do. I view him, like you do, as a kind of stooge, as someone who was not supposed to be in there. And I like that feeling that we are off script. That's a good feeling to me. Unfortunately, that could very easily lead to disaster. But I think you're onto something there with infiltrating Trump. There's a phrase for you.
Occupy Trump.
We gotta,
hey, grab that real quick, Jake or Nick. Please start that Facebook real quick.
We don't need to do it in a way that like we don't need to do it digitally per se. Not like the DNC got hacked. Not like that. We need to hack Trump's ego and get
Twitter the hell out of him.
Yeah, we need to get him to respond. Because of his big-ass ego, and get him to do the bidding of the people by manipulating his ego on Twitter.
You need to penetrate Trump's mind.
He wants
mind
to be
apps.
Popular. He's already rich, right? He's already rich. He's going to become richer because of a lot of different deals. And you know what? I'm okay with a robber baron over an ideological maniac.
Yeah, dude.
Well, I can't wait to see what his first 100 day. It's kind of scary, but it's also kind of exciting. Like, what is he going to prioritize? Like, what, you know? Because he's, like you said, he's an egomaniac, and he's going to be looking for legacy. You know, what is? I don't necessarily think he's going to give in to Republicans as easily as I once did. I saw him as
he hates them. He hates half of them.
And I think his ego is going to disallow him from just playing their card. And I hope so, because the GOP agenda is horrifying, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's crap. And we got to play to his ego so he'll come to the middle where people want it. Medicare for all at the very beginning.
I definitely think his Supreme Court nominees will be centrist far more than they would be conservative, because he's not really a conservative. In the past, he's socially very liberal.
He's extremely socially liberal.
And he's liberal, paleocon economically, and then on foreign policy, he's got his ears to a lot of the neocons, man, unfortunately.
Well, he'll just follow what Mattis says to do.
Yeah, well, you know, in terms of war, I don't expect anything to change on that. I mean, you know, this is not JFK we're talking about. I don't foresee him getting in office. And although he has talked about auditing the Fed, interestingly enough, and he actually, the person he assigned to one of his chairs is like a vaxxer.
He's different. I mean, it's change. I don't know what becomes of it. I think a lot of people's fears are unfounded as long as Trump remains president. I think a lot of people's fears are founded if Pence takes over because of something unfortunate, and people should be careful what they wish for.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll take Trump over Pence any day of the week. We're going to find out.
The best thing about Trump, and this is what I've been saying from day one, when I really started considering the fact that Trump could actually win the whole thing, right around the time of the ending, you know, when the Republican primary came to an end, is that he comes with a built-in opposition, and this is something that we should be optimistic about. I mean, Obama was so bad in so many ways. I mean, of course, don't get me wrong. Obama did do some positive things, and I'm especially happy about what happened with Chelsea Manning. But what I'm saying is Obama got away with so much shit because he didn't have much of a public opposition. I mean, there was a couple fringe wing, you know, right-wing people that thought he was a Muslim Kenyan, you know, but that these people were like a fraction of the Republicans. Trump, on the other hand, comes with a big built-in constituency of opposition, which consists of a lot of people. And that is something that we should be kind of celebrating, because Trump is going to be like his entire candidacy, however long, or his entire presidency, however long it lasts, it's going to be like the last two years of George W. Bush, like completely opposed. So that is something that we should be happy about, because that, again, it's going to be part of the thing that plays into Trump's ego here. And push him into the right direction on
things. And then you'll get Nina Turner or Tulsi Gabbard or a combination of both, or Bernie or whatever.
But unlike Bush, though, Trump has both branches of Congress on his side. So it's going to be just a war of attrition on the right of getting a policy. It's going to be like what healthcare was for the left. You know, they didn't get the universal option, but they came up with something. That's what's going to be on the right, on every single issue. It's going to be just this capitulation to the right. You know, I think the most exciting thing is to see what Trump does in terms of trade and war. On social issues, I think he's going to be, you know, pretty much. I don't know, man. I think
about doing the swords to plowshare program they wanted to do in the '60s. And sparking a green revolution worldwide, because they were talking about how if the Earth was made into a Gaia, we could hold 12 billion comfortably, like with U.S. style of quality of life of being able to eat three meals a day, mm-hmm. and having a pretty good energy amount. Like, yeah, you can't all have cars, but we can all have public transportation and like electric bikes. I mean, we can. There's 6,000 patents the Pentagon owns right now, and a lot of them are not war. So if there's a sea change, if people decide they want to tap those patents for profit instead of having war, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I mean, yeah, if the human race suddenly wakes up and decides to be awesome, that'd be awesome, but I don't think it's going to happen.
If these scumbags all die all of a sudden and all these cool people get into positions of yeah. power, that'd be awesome.
If every asshole dies tonight,
trillions of dollars is what we have spent overseas blowing up countries and then nation building them. In fact, we're working on an article for the Anti-Media, which is going to be out tomorrow. And it was an interview with the dude that started Alibaba, which is one of the biggest companies in the world. It's, you know, China's version of Amazon, and the dude is this billionaire guy. He was like, you know what? Like, America messed up because it spent trillions of bucks on war and not trillions of dollars on infrastructure. That's where America's big problem was. And this is a Chinese billionaire dude looking in from the outside, and he's on his way to see this guy, I think, recently, or is planned to soon meet with Trump. I mean, this guy is planning on doing a lot of business in the United States.
He's right, because it would only have cost us $1 trillion to renew our energy grid to green.
Yeah, dude. I mean, think about that.
It's unbelievable.
And you know, here's the thing that blows my mind. Didn't that jet cost more than $1 trillion?
Yeah, it's at 1.5 now, with 276 critical errors that are going to run an additional $1 billion. Which, yeah, it's a drop in the bucket, but it's not even flyable yet. But you know what's really messed up? The ones that we shipped over to Israel are flying fine.
So, you know, I guess I haven't checked your numbers on going green for the entire country on solar at $1 trillion, but let's just say, you know, that jet costs like $1.5 trillion or something. Let's say we threw that entire budget at renewing the entire energy grid in the United States to green energy. Like that's something that we could have spent it on instead.
We could have upgraded the F-22 with $500 billion and made it stealth and ridiculous and took that other trillion and done that.
God, man, it's just it's unbelievable what we've spent our money on, and this crap that we have, like this surface-to-air missile system at Standing Rock. I mean, we really put our money into that. Like, it's just so, like, unbelievable what we've done.
It kind of makes you think there's something going on that you know, we don't know about that they do, because Obama's been hinting that. He even said in his last press conference today, he said he thinks when Trump actually gets in there that he'll view things differently. Now, is that a coded message that, you know, the president knows things that the public doesn't? Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, that's an understatement. Obviously, there's things the president knows that we don't. But I'm talking, Jake, about something big.
You made a great point last night where you said Obama's probably fully aware of everything, but you literally cannot stop the MIC, the wheels that grind it. There's no way you can do it, or you just get shot.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's there's a reason why.
I was just in PB last night, and I'm coming back home from PB, which is Pacific Beach for those that are obviously not familiar with San Diego. And, you know, this is an economically rich area. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of profitable small businesses, not to mention any of the corporate chains that are in Pacific Beach. Both of you guys know what I'm talking about. And I'm leaving Pacific Beach, heading back down here to Chula Vista. And the road is just the road is so shitty that it's like you're off road. It's like you're off. You might as well be off roading on when you're in the right lane. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, man, this city, this town of Pacific Beach probably generates, I don't know, billions of dollars.
It's billions over
activity every year. And you drive out of the place and it's as if you're off-roading on the pavement. So there's like, where in the hell is all the money going? It's going somewhere and we're not seeing it. That's what's, you know, that's the big problem here.
To the military.
That's the problem, dude. Like, there's all of this money everywhere in the United States. So everybody pays taxes on everything they buy. Where in the hell is all this shit going? Because I drive out of these places, and it's like I'm off-roading on the street. Potholes and everything.
Money.
It's ridiculous.
We print money. We're still the global reserve. So it really, honestly, all it is it's a control. Taxes are a control. Taxes, in a way, are there to penalize you at this point. I hope, by God, they release some kind of a relief valve where there's a maximum tax, because why would you work super hard if you couldn't get if there's like no maximum? But yeah, it could be really high for billionaires. You know what I mean? We could be realistic.
Ah, dude, it's just blows my mind, man. Blows my mind that we're blowing up bombs or blowing up roads and fucking bridges around the world.
Let's just see. You know, let's try and track a change in Trump that after he's
inaugurated. Occupy Trump. Can we get on that real quick?
Yeah, dude.
Occupy Trump.
All right, guys. We'll be back. Anti-Media Radio, 5 days a week. I'll be back Monday. Peace out, everyone.
I'ma let him know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo, stereo. My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of